A milestone to report, but does it have any meaning on the ground in Syria's civil war? The United States has suspended talks with Russia over the war in Syria, accusing Russia of failing to live up to its commitments. Secretary of State John Kerry has accused Russia of destabilizing the region. There are reports that Russia is sending SA-22 surface-to-air defense missiles into Syria to protect Assad's regime and Russian forces from American warplanes. Andrew Kramer is a reporter for our partner, The New York Times, in Moscow. He says the consequences of this suspension are largely symbolic for now, but still alarming.
I don't mean to speak too generally about Russians, but there is a belief among Russians that things can always get worse. And that's what we're seeing now in relations with the United States. What happened yesterday was the State Department informed Russia it would halt cooperation on peace negotiations in Syria. And really, in expectation of that announcement, although not formally linked to it, President Putin announced that he would withdraw from a post-Cold War era nuclear agreement having to do with plutonium disposal. So we have an unraveling on both sides. A discussion about Syria. We have both countries flying fighter jets over Syria, potential for mishaps there, and Moscow shifting the discussion to nuclear security and nuclear disarmament treaties.
On the nuclear question for just a moment, is there any practical consequence of the rejection of this post-Cold War era treaty?
Not so much, but it depends on how it's looked at. Plutonium has an extraordinarily long half-life. So leaving plutonium in storage means that humanity has a risk that's just out there for potentially hundreds of years. In the immediate future, the implication is that this plutonium will not be monitored or controlled by a bilateral treaty that had mandated both countries to dispose of 34 tons of plutonium. This is enough plutonium to make many thousands of nuclear bombs. The Russians have said that although they've withdrawn from this treaty, they still won't use the plutonium for military purposes. So in the short term, it's more symbolic. In the long term, it leaves open this lingering question that was left outstanding after the end of the Cold War on what to do with all of this doomsday material. It will be with us for some time, apparently.
Do we know when the last time was that either the Russians or the United States disposed of a sizable, significant amount of plutonium, and any indication what the latest update of the accounting of what's left that supposedly was being monitored under this treaty?
I think that both countries from time to time reprocess plutonium for various purposes. The most obvious purpose is to create something called Nix oxide fuel, which can be used in a civilian nuclear power plant to generate electricity. And this process renders the plutonium useless for nuclear weapons. It transforms it into a different material through the nuclear reaction. The Russians have embraced this, and they have built a facility to process plutonium into mixed oxide fuel and then subsequently burn it in a reactor. And small portions of the plutonium have been processed in this way. The U.S. has likely, on an experimental level, done this. However, the industrial facility in South Carolina is not finished yet and is not budgeted for next year because of glitches and cost overruns. The U.S. proposal is to bury the plutonium and hope for the best. Some experts in this field say that's actually a superior solution because the risk of transporting plutonium to reprocessing facilities and moving it to civilian reactors is greater from the point of view of nonproliferation than simply burying it underground.
Well, that's great information. It certainly sounds like neither side has been terribly responsible or serious about the plutonium disposal, but that's neither here nor there. Let's talk about Syria in the remaining couple of minutes that we have. It's not as though the cooperation between Russia and the United States over Syria has made any tangible diminishing of the civil war in Syria. What do you think the consequence is of this lack of cooperation, despite aside from accidents in the air?
Well, it would certainly be better for everybody if Russia and the United States could bet together on Syria. There's been reports coming out of Aleppo, which is a focus of the war now, of extensive bombing and shelling of civilian areas by the Assad government with backing from Russia, maybe even Russian airplanes involved in that very careless targeting of civilian areas. So that will likely or presumably continue. There are not many options for the United States to confront Russia militarily without starting, well, as the Russians pointed out, a nuclear war, and pointed out with their statement and their announcement of withdrawing from this nuclear treaty to sort of draw people's attention to the stakes here. There's been a report that Russia is moving the S-300 anti-aircraft system into Syria. There already is an S-400 guarding the Russian base there. So these would be systems likely capable of shooting down American airplanes if they were put to use and handed over to the Assad government. That's not confirmed yet that's happened, but that was a report today. So the options are limited, I think, for military solutions. It's really, you know, which country is willing to play chicken more aggressively here. The U.S. could also get involved in this game and start targeting, for example, Assad government forces or supplying weapons to rebels that would be more effective in rebuffing airstrikes, but once again, at the risk of more directly confronting Russia.
Syrian government forces have suggested that they're trying to take East Aleppo away from the opposition. Are Russian media confirming that that is indeed the case? Are Russian military units assisting in that? And will they describe the final takeover of that opposition stronghold as a liberation of Aleppo if it happens?
They would most likely describe it as a liberation. The Russian position is that there is a government in Syria, the Assad regime, and then there is a terrorist rebellion. And they don't make too many distinctions between the various factions that are fighting the Assad government, ranging from the Free Syrian Army to the Islamic State in Iraq and Syria. So they just lump all of these groups together as terrorists. And that's generally how the reporting here has covered the battle for Aleppo.
Well, that's pretty grim. Andrew Kramer, thanks so much.
Sure. Thank you for having me on.
Andrew Kramer is a reporter for The New York Times based in Moscow.
Support for The Takeaway comes from Lumosity. Lumosity brain training with games to challenge memory, attention, and problem solving. From scientists and game designers exploring new ways to research human cognition. Learn more at Lumosity.com. And Staples, with copy and print solutions for small business, including color copies and presentations, booklets and manuals, and custom framed prints and posters. More at Staples stores or Staples.com. Staples, make more happen.